This is Shayna.
And Chris.
And we are Bad Queers. If you came out of the closet and got put in a box of stereotypes you don't belong to, then welcome to the Bad Queers Club.
All right, this week in Queer Urban Dictionary, I have internalized oppression, which is the fear and self-hate of one or more of a person's own identities that occurs for many individuals who have learned negative ideas about their identities throughout their life. My sentence is, one form of internalized oppression is the acceptance of the myths and stereotypes applied to the oppressed group. That could be colorism, could be pretty much a lot of the isms, to be honest with you, but yeah.
True.
Also saw that internalized colonization, but it's like a word that's adjacent to internalized oppression. I saw it used interchangeably in the sentence, in the paragraph that I saw. So that's what that is.
All right.
Like, just started off on a
really upbeat note.
Yeah.
Really upbeat note. Ready to go.
Yeah. Nowhere to go but up from here on this episode, especially. So.
Okay. Well, my Queer Urban Dictionary word of the week is flinta. Flinta, which stands for female, lesbian, intersex, non-binary, trans, and agender people. Flinta was an attempt to open up autonomous feminist spaces for people who do not fall under the category woman or feel they don't belong to it, but are nonetheless oppressed and or restricted by the patriarchal system. So using flinta, this came around in the 1970s in Germany as a way to address this group and to make sure that they felt represented and seen. But it was a big feminist movement at the time. So flinta. All right, let's go ahead and shift into our category. Is we're going to praise Billy Porter, and we're going to talk about the Jerrod Carmichael reality TV show that's coming out. I was very excited to kind of see this initial headline story to understand. Well, not even to understand, more so to. No, I think understand is right. So with Jerrod Carmichael, we know that he is a little bit awkward, and the way that he moves about things is brilliant and awkward. Mm-hmm. Which happens for a lot of brilliant people. And so he has a reality TV show coming out, but it's not like a typical reality TV show. It's like a real life TV show.
Yeah.
Where
did you watch the first episode?
Haven't watched the first episode, but I'm real excited about it. You saw it good. I had a feeling you did, but I wanted to talk about it because as soon as I saw this, I was like, this is great. So, I read the article on them, and that's how I know that this is happening. So if you all didn't know that he has a reality TV show, it's out. In the first episode, you see the awkward, drawn-out process of Carmichael confessing his feelings for one of his best friends, rapper Tyler, the Creator. What follows is an occasionally painful look at what it's like for a queer person to fall in love with a close friend, then get turned down, something many of us can relate to no matter how we identify. So you watched it. How was it?
It's like an exhibitionist thing. It's not really, I feel like the reality TV show is kind of, I mean, it is reality. It is very, like, even the placement of the cameras are, it's interesting. Definitely an honest look in his life. It starts right around the time, definitely after Rathaniel came out, which was his comedy special, critically acclaimed award-winning comedy special where he came out. And he's in the first episode about to host the Emmys. This is leading up to the Emmys. So he has cameras everywhere. He's doing his camp, like media rollout of being the host and everything. And on the other side of it, personally, he shared that he had texted, Tyler, the Creator, and told him his feelings. And Jerrod is, he's awkward, but it's endearing. But he's dating at the same time. So he's like on Grindr, on these apps, and gets active. There's like a scene where he's sucking toes and everything. So he gets after it.
Oh, I love that for him.
White guy's toes too. I was like, okay. Oh. Yep. But the whole like I guess, plot and premise, main thing of this first episode is that he professes, you know, love. Well, not his love, but he professes feelings to Tyler, the creator, which is a close friend of his. And Tyler just answered with like a ha ha ha, stupid bitch. And he hadn't talked, like they hadn't cleared the air since then. So he texted him and asked him to go to the Emmys with him. And Tyler didn't answer. And then he like texted him that he wanted to have a conversation in person. So Tyler comes over and it's kind of like going with the flow with like, there's these cameras here, but it's like, okay, dude, whatever's going on. And they had this sit down about that text and just how things had been distant. And yeah, he just gets curved on TV. Like, and to put that out there is like another level of self-deprecation because yeah, it was cringy and uncomfortable because, you know, we've all had we've been there before. Everybody's been there before, but it's like, yo, he's producing and putting this out. And
right.
Like, Tyler, the creator, there's different conversations going online about both of them because they famously both don't date black men. So seeing them two, like Tyler turn Gerard down and then simultaneously different scenes of Gerard only dating non-black men is just interesting, to say the least. So I'm hooked. I think it's going to be a good first season. And, you know, he does things in a really kind of clever way. Again, like this is like shot. So like, you just feel like you're like peeking in, like mm-hmm. it is shot in that way. But yeah, like Tyler just curved him. He's like eating food in front of him. And he was like, what did I say to answer? And he told him that you called him a stupid bitch. He laughed in his face. And like, Tyler's just like, yeah, like, nah, like avoiding it. Like where it's like, you could tell he's trying to like, not really hurt his feelings and all, but just like, nigga, nah, like, I don't feel the same way. So, yeah, again, going to be interesting to see. I know the trailer had dropped for the show, and there's a lot with his mom that is just, yeah, a must watch, especially if you're black queer person. But yeah, the conversations online have been interesting about him getting curved by Tyler, the creator, and then both of them being, you know, black queer men that don't date black men. Yeah. So
it's almost like it made it his exception.
Yeah.
To the rule.
Yeah. That's why I think the star power of it, because Tyler, the creator, is obviously very talented, but it's just like, you know, there's deeper conversations because there's a lot of straight people coming to it just like, wow, like I saw some guy saying like, damn, you know, like the gay niggas be, you know, curving people too like that, or, you know, don't have mercy. And it's like, well, yeah, it's like it's the same thing. It's just different, you know, orientation. But then there's labor within our community because we know both of those people are queer, that you're watching two people who have been accused of maybe having some internalized, you know, oppression stuff going on that are like, oh, it's kind of like the Spider-Man meme.
Definitions in action.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's just interesting to watch. Yeah. And then Gerard's homegirls, his two closest friends are these two black women that are so funny. So it's a good, I definitely would recommend it. Like, you can't look away, but that first episode was like, whoa, cringy, but also you just have to, you're not going to turn from it. It's 30 minutes of like, wow.
All in 30 minutes? So
it's a half hour, very quick. So, yeah. So
I'm so excited for this.
Yeah, watch it. It is, yeah, you should watch it. I think it comes out on Fridays or something. I saw toe sucking on my timeline and I was like, oh my God, is the first episode out? And watched it. I was like, this is how he's going to do it. Okay. Mm-hmm. Like, cause you know, again, yeah, he's uber talented. So after following Nathaniel, it's like seeing this behind the scenes of, you know, his successes, but also just mess. Like, he's like so awkward about it too. Like he does the whole, like, I text him, I don't want to look at my phone thing. Like, you know, like he is that person. Like, he's just like, oh, has he answered? Like, so it's endearing, but it is just like, you know, woof. That's a choice. That's your first episode is getting curved by Tyler, the creator. So,
and sucking toes.
Look at that. And active. Like, he has several different dates. Like, he is, you know, I mean, he's not a bad looking guy. So, well, you know, it's subjective, but you know, he's gonna get dates. So I was like, somebody heard that and was like, is he? It's like, it's subjective, but you know, he has talent.
Yes. So, where is the streaming?
On Max. HBO Max.
Okay.
HBO Max. Yeah.
Well, there you go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know how they get after it. So.
Honestly, that's yeah. why I figured with the styling. I was like, this doesn't sound like a Netflix or a Hulu type mm-mm. event. So mm-mm. Max does mm-mm. tune in for these little niche moments.
Yeah. Very 90s, like voyeurism type thing going on with it. Like how he shoots it, you know,
okay.
and how it's produced. Yeah. It reminds me of 90s HBO. Yeah. Okay. At night.
There you go.
You know, so you
that
know,
night. Oh my
yeah,
gosh.
Yeah.
That was
you
time.
Know where it could get there. Because time. Again, you can just like, it was just like, okay. Like the toe sucking could have totally been left out. Like that was absolutely an editorial production decision to have there. Them on
he was
there.
Like, you put them toes in there?
You put those. Yeah.
Put and them toes in there.
There was a guy that he was dating or just one of his people that is completely covered in head to toe of like, he has like blackout glasses, like does not want to be seen on this. And just is like, so, you know, some people are down for it and some people aren't. So, yeah, check it out. It's interesting.
I'm excited. Yeah. I'm excited to see this. Mm-hmm. All right. Our next category is, yes, we know that by the time this podcast comes out, we will already know the winner. But you know how we love to record a little early, guess, and then discuss the following week if we were correct. So we are going to talk about the digest. Elite Eight games. We had a civil war on Monday.
A whole civil war, girl.
It was a time to behold. And it's funny that you say that it was a civil war because my friend who I was with, there was a group of us, but the one friend and Melody was with us as well.
Oh, nice.
Shout Hi, Melody. It was hilarious because my one friend who was sitting there as the game started, she just looks at us and she says, you know, if Iowa wins, there's an underlying tone of racism in it. And we're set back at least 50 years. And I said, what? I was like, the game just began. Nothing has happened. And then all of a sudden Iowa went on that streak to get up like 17-9. And I was like, oh,
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The games didn't disappoint. The games across the board, well, at least on Monday night, because I feel like on Sunday, you know, with that side of the bracket with SC and North Carolina State, it was like, you know, they were good games, but they weren't Monday's games. Monday's games were really good, starting with, yes, the Civil War with Iowa and LSU. The most watched women's basketball game in history, 12.3 million. It beat out a lot of other sports in terms of ranking. And also just a good sports night until the end. Just like how last year with the championship game, a lot of shenanigans afterwards that we'll get into. But all the stars showed up. I wish Angel Reese didn't tweak her ankle. That was obviously a big momentum change in the game.
Huge
because they were going
change.
Back
all
and
the
forth
momentum.
At first. All the momentum. Yeah. Because, I mean, obviously the first quarter was just a heavyweight slugfest. Like, Caitlin comes out, role players are role playing on Iowa. Mm-hmm. Angel Reese is doing her thing. Like, it was such a good first quarter and then even and first half. But once Angel tweaked her ankle, it was like, okay.
Then,
you know, she didn't score as much in the second half and still had a monster game. But it was like, Kim, what?
Okay.
This defense all game. And just, never adjusted. Never adjusted. Mm-mm. Played more defense. I saw somebody say played more defense with those articles than she did with Caitlin. Because Caitlin could have got off, but the 12 assists were
here's
no
the
excuse.
Thing.
And then
here's the thing.
Haley
being
Haley.
The person. Because first of all, they came out and put the freshman, the freshman to come out and guard Caitlin Clark. And I said, look, Poa is an iconic freshman to play, but she has not come in and done like an overabundance of exciting things, right? She has been solid. Yeah. She has been a good back and forth person. Yes. But not guarding Caitlin Clark good. Okay. Mm-mm. And Haley, I was over here like, in what world is Haley keeping up with Caitlin? Even as Haley has been a former teammate of Caitlin and knows how she works. And poor little Haley, 5'7", little Haley,
like
over here, over 6 foot tall, Caitlin Clark couldn't do anything. There's the meme of her turning and just and it happened twice because
thing.
Angel Reese
it's
did
so
it.
Funny. Yep.
And Haley Van Lith did it. And that's when I was like, well, this game is over because
yeah.
what?
Yeah.
And I stopped it. I was like, you know, for a game like that, that's a game where I would have tried to figure out, and I know with the positioning and everything and mm-hmm. where you're supposed mm-hmm. to go, but I would have figured out the way to switch Flagey.
Yes.
To be
yes.
defending Caitlyn.
Yeah.
Because if anything, like obviously Caitlyn would have gotten her shots off regardless. There's no Caitlyn not yeah. getting her shots off, but Flagey would have given Caitlyn the pressure that Caitlyn hates.
Yeah.
And that's body physical in your face type defense. Caitlyn hates that. Like she loves to work against it, but it throws her off at times. We saw that in the earlier games where they almost gave it away.
I felt like when she switched later in the game in the fourth quarter, which it was already too late because the third quarter is when the game was won.
It like, was. That it was.
Like, well, I was just like, Caitlyn I feel over,
bad
I like,
watching the fourth quarter.
Yeah. Because it was just like, they're not coming back. Like they're mm-mm. not. Because, and again, like Caitlyn's ability to pass and just the questionable defense that Kim Mulkey, again, all game, no adjustments. You went into halftime. It was like, no, let's keep rolling like this. This
right. is like, she I don't watched know. No tape. It was like she no watched tape. No tape. It even in her sense. After her post game interview, she was just like, you know, just like last year, you know, we were able to shut yeah. her down a little bit, but she still did her thing. It was just, you know, this year we didn't come out on top. And I said, I'm sorry, did you? She basically admitted that she did the same thing as yeah. last year and she knew that that didn't work. And so I was like, did you not study? Did your whole coaching staff not study? Did anybody yeah. not look at the adjustments that they could have made and didn't? And yeah. didn't.
Yeah, I mean, it was white on white crime at one point, like with Haley. Like it was just like I felt so bad. I was like, somebody say that white girl. Like it was right? just she like, ate her up.
The fact that we felt sympathy for her because yeah. we were just like, damn girl. Yeah. I was like, is this what reparations looks like? A little bit.
And not really though, because it was just I was like, I don't know if Kim had linked up with the Iowa. Like I just didn't understand like the just no adjustment like. Yeah. Like,
ever since Haley's been on this team, she's been put in positions that she should not have been put in.
Yeah.
For her career. I'm like, girl, you are getting set back a bit because of some of the decisions that are being made on the coaching staff, in my humble opinion.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, this game was lost with Kim because and it's all at Kim's fault to me because you knew what Caitlyn was. You let Caitlyn, you could let Caitlyn go off because Caitlyn's going to go off. And again, she showed up. More power to her. It was an incredible game. But the 12 assists, the getting the other people involved, like she, like the, it just all night didn't, even when Angel Reese was going on her run and like holding the team in the first half, it was mm-hmm. just like no one, I was like, no one's showing up. Even Flagey had a quiet game. She had a lot of
like
points.
She but showed like up she more really... in the second half of the game. Angel in the first half. And I was saying this the whole time. I was like, Angel and Flagey have this thing where they really don't show up at the same time.
They don't.
It's always a back they and don't. Forth. So as soon as Angel got hurt, which I was impressed that she even immediately came back in. Once she got hurt and then came back, I was like, oh, I don't know. And then Flagey's going to have to pick it up. If they could ever be on fire at the same time, it would be an impeccable thing.
Yeah. But I mean, you know, their role players didn't show up. They missed a lot of shots that they should have made. And I mean, it was a great game, but it was just like, it could have definitely, I don't know. Kim did a disservice to them in a lot of ways and all that. Disservice. So, and again, given that first off, that article came out, the Washington Post article came out and it wasn't that as bad as she made it seem. The LA Times one was racist as fuck and wrong as fuck. And questionable timing to even be like slide that in. I was just like, why'd you let her off the hook? Like, because like Kim, there was other things to talk about with the Washington Post article and we probably should circle back to that at some point. But then the LA Times comes out and whoever that writer is just kind of took the heat off because it was just like, all right, that's racist as fuck. Like your column is racist as hell. Like dead ass. So I don't know, but final four predictions, championship predictions. Like, what do you think is going to happen?
Oh my goodness.
Shout out to UConn.
Okay.
I had them going this far. Actually, the only miss in this Elite Eight was, I didn't have, of course, NC State going this far, but, I had UConn going far. I don't know what it was, but Paige is, you know, Paige is back.
Well, the fact that Paige and Juju Watkins had basically the same stats shows, man, and Juju's only a freshman. Paige is going into her senior year. Like,
yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Is yeah. phenomenal to see her take game. The program this far. All of that. That was a great back and forth game. Back and forth. The whole battle, the whole time. And then they just inched away in the ending moments, which was great to watch. And just to see the shots on shots and banks and all of the things. But that was a great game as well. I'm still super impressed with UConn doing this with a limited bench because of all of their injuries. Like, they literally have five people injured. I don't think you all understand how difficult it is to play my bracket, this series. I literally did. I was like, I don't think UConn's going that far. But Chris was rooting for him. I had nothing him still scientific. Here.
I was just like, I had a feeling like Gino revenge, Paige revenge. And like they could do it. I mean, at this point, they could. So, they could. But I mean, I do think they could stop. But
yeah.
Do you think they beat Iowa? Who wins?
Oh, my God.
Paige versus Caitlin. It's. I mean, you could have scripted it better, but this is also like, I feel like.
I know.
A Birdman hand rub for.
I know. It's like UConn is such a smart team.
Mm-hmm.
And Paige against Caitlin is a much more even battle.
Yes.
But Hide something alone. Still tells me it's going to be an Iowa USC final.
Wow.
I'm still. I'm sticking beside it. I think it's going to be an Iowa USC final. And then USC. I hope South Carolina puts them to sleep. Thank you so much.
USC.
USC. Yeah. South Carolina final. That's what I think. So.
Yeah.
What about you?
I do. You know what? I think that Paige and Gino and Aaliyah.
They'll do it.
I think they do it. I do think they do it. And then they lose to SC.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like this plan. Yeah.
But okay. I'm not doubting Caitlin Clark anymore in anything. So
there's been no doubts.
There's no doubts. They totally can. If the role players show up again, then they'll be fine. They'll roll past UConn. But we'll see.
We'll see. All right. Well, let's go ahead into the key moment of today that we must discuss. So letting you all know, you all should know by this point, a certain someone came out with a certain album. And we are going to now talk about that album for majority of the episode, just so you all are aware. So if you were here to listen to the Am I a Bad Queer segment, we are skipping that. We're going to talk about the one and only Beyoncé Giselle Knowles Carter. We are going to talk about Cowboy Carter. And we couldn't do this without bringing our good friend back to the episode, Joshua Mackey. From Into More.
Yay.
How are you?
Thank you, y'all. Back, I've been doing fabulous. Thank you so much. I'm happy to see y'all. Happy to be here. Happy to share space with our wonderful, wonderful team, Beyoncé Giselle Knowles Carter, aka Cowboy Carter, if you will.
Josh, important place to start with this. Where were you when you first listened to this 27-track masterpiece?
Well, let's see. March 29th, Friday morning at midnight, 12:01 a.m. Eastern time, that is. I was in bed. No. On that day, it was a standard work day, so to speak. But you know what? It was full of Beyoncé. It was full of all 27 tracks in all of their glory. Front to back, and it was literally the only thing that I was playing all day and for the weekend. We needed to set aside that time.
Yes.
You know, my browser was off that day. I like to hilariously that, you know, they took off because of Beyoncé. They knew they had foresight, unlike me. But
yes.
But honestly, I was trying my best not to be on the floor in tears, trying not to be on the dance floor, twerking to certain songs. And also trying to make sure that other people do not try to find Jolene. Because, you know, at this point, Jolene and Becky are not safe.
They're not safe.
I'm going to tell y'all.
Two of the most wanted, if you will.
Okay.
Ooh. No?
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Maybe.
Come on, friend. I was so proud of you for that.
I was like, felt like a right time. Put that in.
It was perfect timing.
Shayna, where'd you listen to it at? And did you press play? I mean, you press play immediately, I'm sure.
Oh, yes. I had the joy. One of my good friends hosted a listening party at his house. And the fun part was my family was visiting and I pre-warned them. I said, if you continue this trip, I am just letting you know that I will be leaving for the night to go listen to this album. and then talk to you about it the rest of the weekend. So I went to my friend's, and it was me and a room full of gay men at his place, just sitting and listening and absorbing Cowboy Carter in all of its glory. It was great. People were doing line dances. People were falling over each other, audible groans and moans and things I would not have wanted to be anywhere else. I had a backup in case, because there was another like party that was doing a listening party that was not far from where I was. But once I got the house party invite, I said, yes, I'm going to be around the people who understand and who appreciate what this is, and not the folks who are in there like, what is this song? Like, what? I don't get it. I just want to hear Jolie. No. I needed to be around the people who understood. And that's where I got to listen to it at 11:05 Central Time.
All right.
Press play immediately. Nice.
That was it.
I listened on Friday night. So I had Emery was put to bed. House is clean. Everything's reset. Quiet of the night. Get to put my headphones on and enjoy it. So that was cool. And I got to listen. So did listen to it twice because you have the time and it's night and it's just amazing. And yeah, so it was great. I did avoid pretty much all the social on Friday. I didn't want to hear anything, but I knew even whatever I saw, the glimpses that came across, like, I don't, you know, it doesn't matter until I like press play. So it was cool. No. Yeah.
It's impressive all that right. You were able to avoid the things. So congratulations.
Yeah.
Congratulations on that.
My time. But yeah. You can avoid, you know, you can avoid things if you want to. You can just not be on the internet. So
that's really the main avoidance. Yeah.
Yeah. Just don't go online. So yeah. So for initial thoughts on your first listen, your first time through, like what was the feeling when you were done after check 27? What was your like first thought?
She did it again. That was it. I mean, I was like, oh my God, like this is another masterpiece. I immediately felt like I was whisked away into Beyonce's Cowboy Carter narrative. And honestly, from like the beginning where we are literally giving a requiem to those we have lost. And I feel like her talking about her matrilineal heritage and all those who came before her to set, you know, that path ablaze for her to come in, and then listening all the way down and getting to Miss Dolly Parton, aka Dolly P, giving her a cosign. I'm like, you pulled out the greats. You got Willie Nelson, you got Miss Dolly P, you got the Linda Martell out here, the Linda Martell, right? So for me, I was just like, man, this is another masterpiece. I was just expecting, I don't know what I was expecting, nothing less than that, but mm-hmm. to me it felt that was what was first hit me, and then I just felt like I was at home. I mean, Renaissance Act One is mm-hmm. us, right? And that's very black, it's very brown, it's very, you know, queer. And here we are with Cowboy Carter, where it's like, no, we're going back to what the roots are. Black folks have been in country. We've always been in bluegrass, folk, Americana. We are at the center. Y'all push us out of it. But mm-hmm. Beyonce's here to remind you and everyone else that's in association with this record that we've always been here. And so it felt home as someone from North Carolina. I may not be rodeo country, but I am county fair country, as I like to say. Mm-hmm. But very much still, the horses are there, the people are there, we're still Southern. Mm-hmm. And I just could feel like all of her, that essence coming back, and it just felt like, wow, this is home. It's a masterpiece, it's home. And she also just evolved the genre. I mean, you know, you have folks who are lending things. I mean, you got your Kacey Musgraves, you got your Taylor Swift out there, but I mean, the way that she was able to just fuse so many different things and still give us Easter eggs about what to expect for Act Three. I'm just going to leave that there. I mean, she's a genius. And so, yeah, for me, it was just everything.
What and it's the fact that she could leave Easter eggs when this was supposed to be the album that came first and still make it all line up as it should.
Mind.
How? To think that this was created 5 years ago, that 16 Carriages was the first thing she recorded.
Come on.
To bring in all of the historical context, the wordplay, the stylings, the history, the symbolism, like to have classic Texas actually be represented, to have Louisiana be so represented. It's amazing to have the visualization, but also I think for this album, actually for both albums, it's been a great educational moment. It's a great reminder of what our histories have been. We don't talk about how house music is Black and queer. Mm-hmm. We don't talk about that enough, but now that's the narrative. Everybody knows. Now everybody associates house with voguing and with the Black queer community. They didn't do that before. It was just something that you came out and you raved to and it was a fun time. But then you started learning who the voices were behind the songs and mm-hmm. how they came up in these clubs and how it was built out in Chicago and what it was like when you experienced this at a ball. People did not know the history of that. And fast forward to this, people did not know the history of our Black culture within the West and like being able to be a part of like rodeo culture and being true cowboys and what that history looks like. And I think that's the piece that I have truly appreciated from each of these albums is being like, whoa, this is empowering as fuck. Because now it's like we used to say, oh, we didn't see this, which is always wild to me because I'm like, yes, the internet is here, but how come we could never easily find it until Beyonce drives all of the SEO up so that we can all find it?
Yeah.
Like she's better than Google, getting all the stuff to appear first now. And it's really amazing to be able to see how intentional she is in all of the creation and all of the process, even to the point of bringing in all of these Black country artists that you never really get to hear about and are now able to like, grow their following and grow their base. I was like, we have Shaboozy, we have, you know, Tierra Kennedy, we have Tanner Adele. Mm-hmm. Like, these were people that we potentially would not have heard of if it wasn't because she featured them on her album. And that's an incredible feat as well. Like, I love that everything that she does also brings us together. The launch of Sacred, she invited all of the other Black women who also have hair care lines. There's room in here for all of us. And I think that's a beautiful thing that she's been able to express as well. But the genre bending.
Yeah.
Bish.
Unreal.
My goodness. My goodness.
Unreal. One of the things that you mentioned and that came out, you know, obviously upon release of this album and just all of the, that's what's fun about experiencing Beyonce albums, especially in these last 10 years, is just like, all the information you get afterwards, it's like watching one of those movies where you have to like, you'll go online and you have like all of the meanings and everything out there in the educational moments. But to know that she created this 5 years ago and the whole 2016 CMA story with not feeling welcomed, do y'all think that she did like, she created this and was learning Western and picking up things that she didn't know about, you know, country music, and then was like, looked at the other genres too. Like where it is like, okay, house is Black people. It comes from us, but so is rock, which of course I'm crossing my fingers that Act Three is a rock album. But like, okay, wait a minute, like her having the realization while she's putting, you know, Cowboy Carter together and this together and saying, wait a minute, there's other genres that we should do this for too, because it's, I mean, Renaissance was kind of the same too with a lot of the people we may have known just because we're Black queer culture, but there's a lot of, you know, people we didn't know, you know, and we go searching for and looking at. So do y'all think that she stopped in the middle of making this or towards the end of making this and it was like, wait a minute, I should do the other genres too, like the other genres that are now seen as white genres but come from Black culture?
You know, I won that theory is going to go viral first and foremost. I think that's a great theory. And I do. I think that she might have done that. Because one, she's a Virgo, so therefore peak pettiness. I'm gonna show you better than I can tell you. And so she was shown unkindness. She was shown disrespect in 2016 to a genre that our folks have always been in and she was raised in and can perform the hell out of, first and foremost. And so for her to be like, you know what, let's go do some history, let's do some research and figure out how we can rework the narrative around genres that have traditionally or historically keep Black folks out, even though we have been the harbingers of it all. We are the ones who are the creators of it all, you know, ushering it in into new ways. And so that reclamation becomes something where it becomes not from reclamation to elevation and evolution. And so I do think that she took the time to think about that. I mean, the intention that y'all speak about, like the fact that she did the research. I mean, first and foremost, the revamps of Blackbird and Jolene, I think of critically, where like Jolene fits a lot of like more so about this like idea of powerlessness. And she's like, no, absolutely not. Just like I'm reclaiming my power within this genre, I'm going to show it within the music as well. And Jolene is definitely one about like, it's a fuck around and find out kind of song instead of please don't take my man. It's like, I wish you would. And I think that's a great, and it's a beautiful reclamation because it's again, like, I wish you would try to keep me out of this genre because guess what? I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it well. And you can't help but acknowledge me. And the same goes for Blackbird when recognizing that Blackbird, it's a Beatles song, it's a cover from there. And that's in reference to the civil rights movement as well as at Little Rock Nine, the teens, you know, black teens who are desegregating Little Rock Central High School. And for her to put in other black women who are up and coming artists in country and be like, you were always waiting for this moment to arrive. It hits so different. It's like, you know, you were here to make sure not just for yourself, but you're trying to pave ways for other artists who also have been here for, some of them been for a minute. I think of K. Michelle doing country. I think of Tanner Dell being there for a minute, Darius Rucker, Tracy Chapman, you know, whatnot. Those ones that we tend to know about more beyond like the Linda Martells who really did pave the way too. But like, she's like, I'm going to make sure y'all open these doors. I'm going to open up more doors for more people because I know I can do that. And now there's been a huge spike. I know specifically in Tanner Adele's music being listened to on Spotify, Shaboozy's music listened to on Spotify. I can only imagine what else that's happened. And I love that she's just doing this, not just for herself because she can do it, but because she knows that if she does it, it will help everyone else out in turn. Even using her Innovator Award speech at iHeartRadio, shouting at folks, another rock Easter egg, and I'm keeping my fingers crossed too, Chris, all right?
It was an Easter egg. Geez. It was. Yeah. I heard it, and I was like, Beyonce, don't play with me.
It's coming.
Don't play with me.
It's coming.
But she does. It's coming.
It's coming.
It's coming. It's coming. So, yeah, no, she knew what she was. It's all in her master plan.
It
she
is.
Plenty of other songs in there. She's waiting to just throw at us at one point or another.
Man, the Grammys outfit was an Easter egg. Like, in hindsight, it's just like, woo, there's always something. It's amazing. Yeah.
She doesn't stop. She doesn't stop.
How do you create a hair care line, you know, a movie tour, albums, plural.
Mm-hmm.
Come on.
Raise three kids.
Overworked and overwhelmed. Yes.
Raise three kids, show. What is the coolest fact that y'all found out after listening to this? Like, whether it is, it could be Beyonce related, it could be just, you know, somebody you know. For me, I didn't know anything about Linda Martell, so I'm like, everything is liked and downloaded now in Tidal. And then yeah, I didn't know the Blackbirds fact about that being a Beatles song and what it meant, but yeah, what were some, I guess, facts that y'all picked up after listening to the album and just, you know, talking to folks online, seeing the discourse online?
Well, I can say I loved, not necessarily as part of the album, but the promo for it, where the poster that came out the week of, and it was like, oh, this is in reference to the Chitlin circuits. And I'm like, oh, her mind again. Like, she's talking about like, I'll pave the way, I'm opening these doors. And the Chitlin circuit is literally the network, excuse me, of entertainment venues that Black folks could only perform in. Deep down in the segregated Jim Crow South. And so I think of like folks like Chuck Berry, Aretha Franklin, Little Richard, all these different folks, these greats who have gone through the Chitlin circuit. And
all the greats.
All the greats. And their faces were on the stylized design that she posted on Instagram. And all these folks talking about, I don't know how to read it. Well, I'm like, it's not that hard. But but it's a nice respect to the culture and the history of it all. I also like that knowing that Rafael Sadiq is on the 16 bridges. Like, had no idea.
All through the album.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, all through the album. I was like, that's wild. What's another one? That Stevie Wonder plays harmonica. The album. Like, and now Rogers.
Oh, by the way.
That Dolly Parton wrote some of the lyrics in the updated Jolene. If she was like, hey, Miss Honeybee.
Yeah.
Yeah. I got some things to say. Do you mind?
Dolly is like, I have now had Whitney Houston and now Beyonce sample my songs. Like, y'all, I mean, you couldn't tell me anything.
She said, I'm good.
Dolly P, but
like, she said, I'm good.
I'm very good. I'm very good.
I love that. Real good. I said no to Elvis, but I'm going to say yes to Whitney and yes to Beyonce.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Dolly, for these things.
Yeah.
On top of the stuff that you pointed out, especially the Chitlin Circuit was the one that I truly appreciated learning about and seeing how that was a space created for Black musicians to come and perform and be able to do that, but also leaning back into the connotations of what even like cowboy meant and how, like, you know, today it's been claimed by the white folks and it's like a proud thing that they love. But the word cowboy itself was used in a derogatory way to describe former slaves as boys who were like skilled and had the hardest jobs of handling like horses and cattle. And by doing this album, it like inherently kind of helps destroy that notion as well. I love seeing that. Also, you see the whole piece about like Beyonce doing the percussion with her nails and how she played. So she plays
after
in the back.
After the Patti LaBelle.
Yes, after the Patti LaBelle, Dolly Parton interview. And I was like, that is... To see when she sees everything. Just these little things and just goes and puts them in there, and folks are like, yep, that those are Beyonce's nails playing the little sounds. And I think that was the part that I loved as a musician, to be able to hear all of the different types of instruments that they used, and I could point them out and I was just like, oh, this is amazing. But then going and actually hearing the artists explain how like that riff was very popular, or how this sound was very particular because of XYZ things, or making this sound does this. And it was really cool to see how that pieced it together. And as folks pointed out, if you listen on headphones, you're going to hear more of those background sounds and be able to appreciate how they're woven in. Even just like in Alligator Tears, there was like just a horse clop and it happened for like four beats and that was it. And it just like phased in and phased out. And I was just like, this is a tiny moment, but it's huge. And just hearing that, like, I think that was the thing that got me the most, was being able to hear that. And then hearing from the instrumentalists who got to play it to say like, oh yeah, we did this, or we talked about this, or we planned for this to happen. And that was really cool for me.
Yeah, you definitely have to listen to, it's best listened to in headphones or even vinyl. Are there a couple things left off the vinyl thing? Because I saw discussion of that the Linda Martell stuff is not on the vinyl. Yeah. Like, is it going to come out, or do you think it's like a clearance?
So I think the CD and the vinyl were like created. It was almost like that was like the first version. Okay. Is what it seems like. And then she added the others and then made it up to the 27 songs that it is. So there is like a QR code on the CD. So it's almost like, if I think people are just kind of taking it as, well, I got the first edition. And so it could be, you know, valuable and popular one day, but you still get to listen to the songs on the vinyl, and the cover is worth giving the vinyl anyway. So, but yeah, there are a few songs that are missed, but my goodness. I was like, do I have to start ordering it for you, friend? Because you know I'm on there immediately. I get the text messages. I am ready.
That's why I can't be in the Beehive. I'm so slow to these things. So
you gotta stay ready. I was in the middle of a work meeting. I was talking and it popped up and a friend pointed it out to me, and I'm sitting there and I was doing things and I was still running my whole meeting. Talking, doing the things, went in there, checked everything out, saw what was sold out. And I was upset because the bandana was immediately sold out. And I was like, and as I'm talking, I was like, oh yeah, and then this, and then this. And I was like, oh, the bandana sold out. And then jumped back into what I was saying. And people were like, what? And I was like, oh, my bad. Beyonce just dropped some more stuff. And they were like, oh, continue. Because they knew. They knew I wasn't stopping this meeting.
Tell me, friend, will I get notified if something comes back in for real? Or is this just like, they just needed my, well, they have my information anyway, but
you will get notified.
Once it's sold out, is it sold out?
Sometimes.
Okay.
Sometimes, yes. All right. And then sometimes she magically comes back with other stuff or pops in things later. Because I am too anxious, I can't miss whatever it is, but my Beyonce account, I'm still depositing in it. I haven't stopped, so I can go and make all of these frivolous purchases and be fine.
I mean, which makes sense.
I love it. Do you think she'll release everything maybe for available after all three acts are out?
No, because did you see today that she just put that bincountry.com? Did y'all see this? This happened right before the recording started. She just put up this bincountry.com website. There's nothing on it yet except for this blinking logo that Parkwood posted. And everybody in the comments, the post already has over 1,000 comments of people panicking. And I'm like, got it. So I haven't missed anything yet, but something is happening. So no, because just like we thought with Ivy Park that we were done, she's never done.
true.
She's prepared for all of this. And I'm going to continue to expand my closet to just being a Beyonce closet. And it's fine.
As you should.
What did y'all think of, well, one of my toxic faves, Azealia Banks, her comments about the album?
What comments?
I'll first start off by saying, I don't know if Azealia Banks, like where her family is from or anything like that. But let me just say, as just like a general PSA, that if you are a New Yorker and you've lived most of your life in New York, and even if you come down for summers to the South, Southerners are never going to take your advice about what's country or what's not. Like, I felt like this, I was like, I read some of what she was saying. I was like, all right, I don't care, because Azealia Banks is a Yankee. And I like, one thing as a Southerner, I'm never going to have and put up with is a Yankee telling a Southerner how to be country, how to be. And I don't care what she studied. I know she's a trauma kid. Again, I know she probably could have spent her summers visiting relatives in the South, but like, nah, I'm not. Mm-mm. I was like, this one, sit it out, Azealia. Like, I don't care about your opinion on this.
Yeah. Okay. I'm looking this up because I clearly just was like, whatever to any Beyonce slander for the last few days, honestly.
Yeah.
Apparently she said, why didn't we even try to put even a little effort into a more artistic title, even though there's a lot of probably history behind it, because fan theories are saying that it's a play on words, because obviously Carter is her last name, but it's also the last name of the family widely seen as the first family of country music. So it could be anything. It could be nothing. We don't know. And we know that the album could have been named Beyonce before this started as well. And then Banks takes issue with the cover's overall aesthetic. She said, how you switch from Bob Tree and Black Parade to this literal pick me stuff, saying that she's accusing Beyonce of being in white woman cosplay and reinforcing false rhetoric that country music is a post-Civil War white art form, and reinforcing the idea that there is no racism, segregation, slavery, violence, theft, massacres, plagues, manifest destiny, craziness that form the bedrock of epithets like proud to be an American or God bless the USA. And then she brought up the 2016 CMA Awards and said, you do lame stuff like bring out some blacklisted white women at the Country Music Awards and they would never ever do the same for you. So she had a lot to say.
That sounds like really a piece of what personal. She said. You know, she'd be going off. Yeah.
This is real personal. You know,
I don't know. I feel like some Geminis, they need to have their phones taken away. I mean, I don't know. It's between her, Kanye, Trump, long list of Geminis who have a lot to say.
Yeah.
Sorry to Geminis.
Always. What do you think of the white acceptance and white gaze thing that folks are saying, like, oh, she's really trying for this album of the year, and seeing some like white acceptance stuff where I'm like, no, I'm not getting that, but okay. I mean, it's a reach, I think, but
I think it's a reach too. Honestly, she's been done with the idea of snagging an album of the year, because as we know with the Academy and any creation of any institution, it's those who have created it have the most privilege and they're able to gatekeep. And we all know historically Black folks have been just kept out of so many different things. And so Beyonce is just another unfortunate person who's a casualty of the Academy and its biases. That's it. And I don't think that she made an album specifically to be album of the year. She made an album to be able to redefine what people view as country. And she made an album to ensure that other folks who are like her, like Tanner Adele, like Tia Kennedy, like Allison Russell, and you know, our Native Daughters, all these different Black folks who are just have been circulating within this genre, you know, for a minute, that they could also have their shine as well. And she continues to show that. There's nothing to me, if anything, it's actually a story about how, if you look at the album, the way I've seen it, it is a story of not only just like the Requiem, the Reformation, or like Black folks who have navigated through all the trials and tribulations within this country and within this genre, but it also shows how when you go through in the middle of it, her just be having fun with it, courting it, so to speak. I think of like literally when I see from American Requiem all the way down to the first Smoke Out, it's like, all right, Requiem for everybody. Then after that, Texas Hold'em, she's meeting the genre where it's at, right? And she's kind of courting it, but she's also daring Jolene per se to like tell me that I dare you to come at me and try to take what actually is mine. So even though we can say it's a lover, but like when you look at the songs of Texas Hold'em, Bodyguard, Jolene, Daughter, it all points to her being like, no, this is mine. I'm going to take over it. And I'm going, and this is who I am. It's always been a part of me. To where when you get down to the Linda Martell show, it's her evolving the genre and just having a good ass time with it. And I think that's beautiful because Yaya is like, it's a lot of psychedelic rock, mod influences. Mm-hmm. It feels very 60s, 70s kind of vibe to it all. River Dance. I mean, come on. Can you visualize Beyonce with her $1,000 manicure with the dream out here just with her nails? That's amazing. First and foremost. But I genuinely think that her idea is not to be able to be under the watchful eye of the white gaze. It's instead to be able to create open doors for Black folks to continue to flourish within any genre that they choose.
Yeah, I feel like with all this, I mean, of course it's a reach, but first off, I feel like now at this point, even like Jay-Z Grammy speech aside, she doesn't care. Like the list of musical geniuses that never won an album of the year trumps the list of people who won album of the year. So I don't think she cares about that anymore. But I took the album, the feeling that I took from the album was more of because they were, again, especially once the cover came out, like just all this, like she's trying to be white thing. And I was just like, we talked about it a little, but America is ours too. Like, and I felt that pride at the end of the album of like, we've been through some tough shit, but this is our country. And like the way we show our pride, the way we are proud of our accomplishments, especially just going through, you know, the genre and taking back these genres are a way of like showing that in just like, I don't know, a very visceral way, because you know, you have strong feelings with this album. You like, you can't listen to this album and not like walk away with some feelings. If you do, you're dead, but dead inside. But yeah, like I think it's like the opposite of it. It's just like a fuck you. Like I could put this flag up here because it's like, it's bought and paid. Like it's mine, but it's like, I'm an American. Like I am a Black American, and it's very distinct, and it is the most powerful culture within, you know, American culture. So I don't know. That's what I took it as, but you know, they've been accusing her of this like white gaze, white acceptance thing for a while now. Mm-hmm. So I don't think she cares.
No, I was like, Mama Tina has spoken on it. So that's really all that needs to be said in that regard.
Yeah, that's it.
Like what people just want to, they just want to hate on greatness, and that's all it is.
That's it.
That's really it. But that's there's it. A lot of videos out. I think, do you have an acceptance? I guess, Shane, I should ask you this of like not caring about any criticism anymore, because I feel like y'all are like, y'all have been free from that, but like for real now, like it is like you literally cannot tell me. You were like, Azalea Banks said something.
Cute. Like, I literally did. I like, actually. Surprisingly enough, I had not heard that she had said anything, but also for it to come from Azalea Banks, like, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like you stay in the trenches. So you're just going to try and like drag and slander. I was like, cool. Yeah. Cool. Yeah. Never saw you really stand up for Black women anyway. So here we are.
And doesn't. And you know, she flip flops on stuff so much. So yeah.
Say what I said.
What is y'all's one unpopular opinion about Cowboy Carter? I guess while y'all are thinking, I'll start. And I don't think this is unpopular.
Not you staying ready. What?
I mean, you know, I feel like if I ask the question, I should probably answer first. Okay. You know, I'll put y'all on the spot here.
Okay. All right. We'll think about it.
I'll give y'all a little time. I don't think this is unpopular, but Post Malone, I know he showered and he stopped smoking to record this. But Chris Stapleton was right there. I just feel like she should have got a real country artist. And he did a good job. I do love Levi jeans. But
so funny.
Chris Stapleton was right there. Or somebody else.
Something
you know?
Tells me that blue had an effect on that.
So I felt like that was a... I felt like that song in Post Malone as a feature felt probably the most manufactured thing on the album, where it's like, okay, I know who you're reaching for with this and bringing in. It's like the dirty Air Force One whites, but I thought we could have just gotten like Chris Stapleton for this, but okay. you know, still a good song. Post did a good job. He drank tea, had ginger. He really, again, showered, cleaned up, flicked his hair back. He probably addressed her as Mrs. Carter the whole time. Like, I know he was mad respectful. And mm-hmm. it is a very good song. He did his thing. Mm-hmm. But I felt like that was the most like, okay, this feels like an industry kind of reach. Like, somebody was like, can you put Post Malone on this? Like, because there was, yeah, it could have been a number of artists, but I thought of like Chris Stapleton and, you know, of that ilk. What y'all got? But
I'm just thinking of Post Malone showering. I'm like, that's true. He definitely did.
Once he got that call,
he said, I showered. Absolutely will. Holy. He said, I absolutely yeah. will. Thank you so much. Yeah.
Stop smoking.
Took etiquette classes.
He did. Mm-hmm. He did. I mean, mm-hmm. switch from smoking to vaping, and maybe there was some whiskey tea, but hey, it's still harm reduction. That's all that matters. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
I say for me, and I had to look through this, I was like, the thing that I think I wanted, or a popular thing would have been, and I saw that Brittany Luce, who also hosts It's Been a Minute for NPR, I said the same thing. So I'm just reiterating what other people's posts were saying. I wish that the women who were featured on Blackbird were featured a lot more throughout the song.
Yeah.
And I recognize, like, it's again, I'm like opening the door, you're waiting for this moment to arrive. The lyrics just hit differently when you hear them at the end. I would have loved to have heard, like, more, maybe them each doing a part of a verse a little bit more, just more of their voices being a bit more centered. I think. But, like, oh, still, do I like it? Yes. Do I love that they're on it? 100% yes. And I still think that it would have been cool to have them featured much more prominently within the song as well.
Yeah.
I agree with that. That's a good one.
What do you think, Shania? What is your unpopular Cowboy Carter opinion?
All right. I don't know if this is necessarily for the album, but surrounding the album, a lot of people are trying to speculate whether or not she is going to tour with mm-hmm. this one, or if it's going to wait until the next one comes out and then do a tour with the combination. I'm going to say, and people probably should not come for me with this, I don't think she should tour this one yet. I think she should wait.
I hope so.
Have Act 3 out and then take it as a party. Like, take it fully as a party. She can intermix, intertwine, do all of the things with it. She gave us such a moment with Renaissance, and I love it. This is also incredibly a moment, but because Renaissance was like a full concert, like, it pulled in a bunch of her other songs. So it's like, if she comes out and does this, while she still does have other songs that she can perform, 100%, it's like, once we get to Act 3, okay, what? I think she should wait, maybe do like one or two special shows that kind of like highlight this performance, and then maybe like bring out more of the artists. Because that's my other hope, is that like she brings them on tour with her to perform and gives them more of that moment and more of that visibility. But I actually don't think she should tour yet. We're still on a high from Renaissance at the moment. And I think that we can wait a little bit, play with Act 3, especially with all of these Easter eggs that are coming, and all of the visuals and all the stuff that's happening, and all the crossovers, and, you know, rumors that this could be like a full length musical film, all of that. I think we can wait a bit. So that is my unpopular opinion.
Okay.
As much as I want her to tour always, but I'm like, I think we can wait a little bit.
Yeah. You could, if it's going to be rock in Act 3, you could combine that concert.
Plus, a lot of the songs on Cowboy Carter and Renaissance have relations. There are relations in this. Like, you know, like Sweet Honey Buckin' is pure honey.
Yeah.
And vice versa. Like, you know, there are just things that align that you're like, this makes sense. This makes sense. I was like, the end of Amen sounds like it could definitely go into I'm That Girl. Immediately,
there's a TikTok.
Okay,
of it.
And it shows all of those things. So it's just like hearing all of the little pieces. I'm like, we can take it and get the full thing. It's okay, B. It's okay.
Yeah,
keep playing with us. Keep doing, because she's giving us everything right now. So I think she can have a moment and then return. I mean, if she goes on tour, like, it's not like I'm not going to go. Not like I'm not going to be up front seeing it. But I'm just saying.
Yeah,
that's my unpopular opinion.
Okay. Fair. I like it. Mm-hmm. All right, y'all know we got to end with top five.
Oh, this is my goodness. Something.
Let me tell y'all, behind the scenes, we were trying to decide if it was going to be a top three. We decided on top five because there are 27 tracks.
And I still cheated.
I can't wait to hear this. Who wants to go first? Y'all want me to go first?
Yeah.
I'll go first.
Yeah, because we're so hive. We got to hear.
Yeah. Okay. What, non-hive?
Yeah.
The GDI.
Yes.
Non-hive. Yeah, the GDIs. Non-hive. Oh, this was really difficult. I mean, I was jotting this to the very end. And then there's also, I already have my honorable mentions like under here. So this is very difficult.
Good job.
Very difficult, y'all. Very, very difficult. But my top five in no particular order, because mm-hmm. I love them all. Mm-hmm. You're all my children. Bodyguard. Ugh. I love Bodyguard so much. Alligator Tears. Of course, Shaya. Two Hands to Heaven. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. This last one, I tell you what.
You're looking at that list.
It's hard.
Looking at the whole track list and you're like,
looking at it.
Oh, let me close my eyes.
It's hard, right? I was about to come in here and be like, my top five, Cowboy Carter. My fifth song was Sweet Honey Buckin'. It's just sonically just so much fun. Right under there, my honorable mentions, Two Most Wanted. Mm-hmm. Miley slid on it, okay?
Okay.
Miley in her mm-hmm. Baptist voice, it felt like when the song started, she was in church and they passed the mic down. Is Miley here? And brought her up and passed the mic to her.
Yeah.
I know they're going to perform this, and there's rumors of them performing this at some country music, something coming up, but Two Most Wanted, Riverdance, and then Daughter is just also just the vocals on Daughter, and it's really haunting, and I just love it. Mm-hmm. So those are mine. Shout out.
All right. I like it. All right. So my top five also in no order. So I'm going to 16 Carriages is on this list, but I'm going to put it on a little shelf because that came out first and second. So okay. That's just going to be an asterisk one. So we're going to talk about we're going to shelve it so I can insert another one into my top five, because 16 Carriages is in my top five, but we're going to insert another because we all already knew about 16 Carriages, and that just feels unfair that it had a head start.
Okay.
That's what I'm going with.
Fair. All right.
It's our podcast. We make up the rules. So Riverdance. The way I walk around the house singing that all day, every day is, I know Riverdance has my heart, right? And I sit there and I just cut my nails too. So I was like, oh, it could have been me. Two Most Wanted, the vocals on that, the harmonies and the back and forth. Also, it's just such like, their vocals are just so pure, but they balance each other so well.
Yeah.
My God. Yaya, obviously. American Requiem.
Very good.
Slept on vocally, okay? Slept on vocally. Y'all are not appreciating it. And lyrically, y'all are not appreciating it the way
lyrically,
that it should
y'all
be.
Aren't.
Okay?
Yeah.
You're not. You're not, and I need y'all to pay more attention because that's the beginning of the whole album. So every time you start over, iconicness. Tyrant.
Mm-hmm.
Also not getting enough appreciation because that...
It's so hard.
My God.
So many good ones.
My God. My runners up. First of all, this is my cheating answer. So the transition from Riverdance to Two Hands to Heaven, Tyrant to Sweet Honey Buckin' is nasty. My God.
Yeah.
Not you finishing out an album that way and then going into Amen and just being like, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Desert Eagle is criminally...
Like,
short.
We could even jump up to starting from Oh, Louisiana and then moving our way down. Okay. Yeah. That's
whole actually mine from that down
section.
Let me make sure.
Is it? If you start from Oh, Louisiana and drop it down, my God, perfection. How else can you move through that? Also, Bodyguard is going to be the song of the summer. All I imagine is people on some like roller skates, just driving around
it's
people
so fun.
With their, mm-hmm. you know, convertibles down, the hoopties are up, everything about it. The best was there was the GIF that said "Bodyguard makes me feel like this," and it's Meg from Family Guy, and it was one of those episodes where she had on like the high boots, and they actually like gave her a little body, made her hair super long, and she was just strutting down the street. And I was like, that is the perfect visual right there. Is like, that's how Bodyguard is going to make you feel. So congratulations to Julius for having the song of the summer, and it's great. But yeah, that's my list. I was like, Riverdance. Love it. Too Much Wanted, yeah. American Requiem, Tyrant. I'm sticking beside it. And then that whole transition. My God.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Yeah, Linda Martell's show, 19 Down. I mean, you could include Amen, but 19
That's where Old Louisiana starts, right?
No, well, I group in Yaya, so
yeah,
Linda coming back, letting us know.
Yaya does have to be in that.
Yaya, and then, because Old Louisiana started. It's just like, where are we going in the desert? And it's like, it's just so much.
That was the part that got us going.
Overwhelmed.
When I was watching with the gays when we were watching, we were beside ourselves. And then as soon as we get to Amen and we all just stop and collectively you're like,
yeah.
My God. My God.
That's also when the album flips, right? Because the first half is real, like pretty much traditional country and folksy and all that. But once you get to the Linda Martell show, and even though spaghetti obviously is the genre bending, but like it,
spaghetti
that's
is
the
so
first
good.
Half so of good. The kind of actual traditional Western. And then it's just like, oh my God. Like it just takes a turn.
Yeah.
A really good turn. So Josh, what are your top fives and your honorable mentions?
Oh, way too many, but I'm still stuck on thinking of Miley Cyrus and her Baptist voice and knowing that Dolly Parton took her to church on Easter Sunday and handed her that mic herself.
Okay, to have the godmother and the goddaughter on the same album.
Yeah.
That's a flex.
That's really cool.
The biggest flex.
Yeah. Sister Cyrus is here today. Sister Cyrus, where are you? Pass her the mic. you can hear that. Like, that is in my mind before she comes up because she just right in there. Yeah. Ooh, that's already a karaoke classic, by the way.
Okay.
Like, 100%.
Yeah.
I've already tried to map out the different karaoke songs that I can sing with my husband because I do force him to do karaoke with me.
It's I love that.
I love language. So, yeah, you know. I have to say, this is really hard, but Bodyguard is my number one. That's definitely on there.
Great choice.
Y'all described it. I mean, it's chill, drop top vibes. I imagine myself driving down like a twilight like highway in the desert.
Yes.
Air, metaphorically, you know, flowing in the wind, and you know, and figuratively, I guess, you know, literally too. If I, you know, get me
some follicles,
bust down,
follicles. You got it.
Yeah, I can do that. But that one's number one. I'm gonna take the covers aside because I think that they are immaculately done. However, I'm gonna take Jolene and I'm gonna take Blackbird off my list, and instead, I'm gonna go for with Levi's jeans. I think it's just sexy as fuck. And I know he showers. And
it's the ones he talks about getting the hips. And there was one run in there I stopped and
he
I was
did
like,
a good job.
Post Malone, you might flip me. Because that one, that he did there was like job. One run that he did. And I was like,
yeah. This is like the part at the end where she just lets him let loose. And I was like, okay, all right. I see you, Post. So
he showed up too.
Yeah, he really did show up, you know. Tea and whiskey, showered and all. So Levi's jeans is definitely a fun one. I want to see all the TikToks being made by people dancing with their significant other or others on there. So please and thank you. Two Hands to Heaven. It has a self-titled vibe, I feel like. It makes me think of that driving, pumping beat in there. I feel like I could have easily been on self-titled for some reason. But like, I love it.
She probably had it for self-titled too. And then was like, this feels good.
I'm just saying, she could have. Tyrant, love it. Love it. Love it. Love it down. And honestly, if there was a remix and if these Geminis stopped with the slander, Azalea would have slid on a remix. I mean, the cowboy aesthetic is in her songs. I mean, Licorice is literally that. And can you imagine her on that? Also, Doechii, Swamp Princess on that and a remix. I would have loved to see that. So that's another. What do we got? 1, 2, 3, and 4. So let me count. Then it gets hard. All right. But I did put in Riverdance because, I mean, come on.
Come on.
I was,
it's such a good...
such a good beat. And I was like, I heard that. I was like, oh my God, this sounds like Patti LaBelle and Jolene. I mean, and Dolly. In that interview, and I was like, oh, and behold, it actually is inspired from there. And I was like, this is amazing, Carmine. Now, in terms of like honorable mentions, I didn't say Yaya because I know everyone loves Yaya, but Yaya is great. Yaya is without a doubt. Like, yeah, we love it. I also agree, Desert Eagle slept on, and it should be longer. It honestly should be longer. We need more of it.
It should be longer.
Protector? My God, how can you not listen to that song and not cry?
It's so beautiful.
Indeed.
Mommy, can you play the lullaby? Like, what? Roomy?
I can't. So I can't deal. You like, what? Coming for another Grammy. Each kid is going to get a Grammy.
Each kid's getting a Grammy.
Each kid. And I feel like Sir is going to be featured on Act 3. I feel like that's going to be...
Yeah. So, well, she did write the song for him on The Gift. So it was like...
Well, there you go. That's
here
true.
We go.
That's true. And American Requiem is beautiful through and through. The gospel tinge, the Americana, the psychedelic rock within there, the lyricism, all of it. I mean, can you imagine a choir like taking that on and singing? It also sounds like it'd be a perfect song for somebody's commercial.
Oh my God.
Oh yeah, there's a lot of commercial songs.
Oh my God.
There's a lot of commercial songs.
She actually did a fucking choir.
They are going to snatch Bodyguard up.
Oh my God. Oh yeah, that's going to be in every type of summer movie that's out, every summer playlist. We are going to eat Bodyguard up.
Yeah, the car thing. It's going to be on all the automotive things. Mm-hmm. I mean, Lexus is already happy with Texas Hold'em, but that is such a car song and all that.
It is.
Whew. Yes. Yeah, this is difficult. There, I mean, there's so many good songs. There's so many good songs. It's just Beyonce.
It's Beyonce. That's Beyonce. Look at that.
It's Beyonce's answer.
Wow.
Huh. Mm-mm-mm. Good job.
Good job, everybody. We did it. Josh.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for joining us to be able to do this.
Short notice.
Such short notice. This is how real ones show up. We talk about Beyonce. So we're doing the thing. So, we're doing
unofficial, official music correspondent. Josh Mackey, who has a great article, by the way, on Into about Lil Nas X, amongst your other great articles. But we'll link
that. We had a little something to say to also be in there.
Yeah.
Ooh,
we
have
something to say.
Josh, anything else to plug? Anything to talk about? Anything?
You know, one, make sure to do your research on Beyonce's internet about Calvin Carter before you talk about it, for sure. Okay. One. Hmm. Two, always check out Into, because we have been checking for Beyonce since day one, and we are here to ensure that you know about all the comings and goings of everything happening with the LGBTQ+ community that is geared towards millennials and Gen Z. So please make sure to take a look at our wonderful, wonderful publication. And, you know, other than that, you know what? What a time to be alive in the era of Beyonce. That's it. That's all I got to say.
So that's it.
I'm blessed. And I got to say, my last thing, thank you to Shannon and Chris for allowing me to be here as the official, unofficial music correspondent for Back Grooves Pod.
Yes.
I cannot thank y'all enough for the space. And I will. When you say Beyonce, I'm going to be there. I'm here.
And was ready. Okay.
Stayed ready.
You're like, right. Send the link and the time, and I'm there. Okay. Journalists. Okay. Right. We can talk. Okay. Listen, we really appreciate you joining. And no better person to break this down with, too.
Absolutely.
But we really appreciate you jumping on. And this is what a time. We are very blessed to be living during this. This is pretty.
Look, while the world is trash, we still have Beyonce.
Yes. I saw somebody tweet how they how happy they were to have picked Beyonce at 5 years old and just aging well. Listen,
my best choice at 9. Okay. Yeah. My best choice at 9. Anytime I call home and my mom's like, "You're still hype," and I'm like, "This is my longest relationship in my life. Yeah. Don't you try and take greatness away from me."
And it's not even it's Beyonce.
That's the answer.
Gonna press play later. I've stayed up several times this week just to listen to it again. Like, I was like, I have an hour and 20. Like, I have an hour and 18. Like, let me just get through it. You know, just quick through. But
why not?
Why not?
Why not? Yeah. All right, Josh. Well, we'll probably see you soon.
Yes.
I'm sure there's going to be some more stuff to break down, but thank you so much for joining.
Thank you all so much for having me.
All right, let's go ahead and shift over to wrap up the show, because we ended up doing our unpopular opinions during the show. So that worked out great with all of the things. So, you know, we would never leave you without giving shout outs to our faves. So my shout out this week, besides Beyonce and everybody involved in everything that she does, is to In the Life Archive 2.0, an oral history project archiving the stories of how Black, queer, and trans people lived and loved. You can follow, support, and learn at In the Life Archive 2.0 on IG.
All right. My shout out goes to Quietly Hostile by Samantha Irby, which is essays about the gory particulars of her real life and all that festers behind the glitter and glam. I just started reading this. I know there's a bunch of other books that she's written, but wanted to shout this out. You could follow Samantha on IG at Bitches Gotta Eat.
Mm-hmm. True statement. Bitches gotta eat.
Very true.
Okay.
Bitches do gotta eat.
Thank you all for tuning in to our special Beyonce episode that you didn't know was going to be a special Beyonce episode, but of course you should know at this point that's going to be a special Beyonce episode. So
absolutely.
Thank you all so much. If you haven't listened to Cowboy Carter, highly suggested. And otherwise, we thank you for tuning in and we will see you next week.
Take care.
Shout out to Sienna Liggins for our Bad Queer soundtrack titled Me Again and our sound engineer Cesar for making us sound like we know what we're doing. If you enjoyed the episode, please take the time to leave us a review wherever you listen to podcasts. Until next time.
It's me again. Can we talk about things? I'm so sorry that I'm coming. Hello?